Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I am joined once again by a repeat guest who I have spent far too long not inviting back, and it's not because of his quality, but it is because of my failings as a person, Justin Michael.
Hello, everybody.
Good to have you back, Justin. I hope you're excited to talk about some Star Trek.
I am excited to talk about some Star Trek. It has been a long time, and I do like to talk about some Star Trek, so this is all good.
It's all working out. It's been almost 3 years, but before we delve into Star Trek goodness, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself, Justin?
There's not really too much to tell right now. I'm just some guy on the internet.
You're a mystery.
Yeah. I mean, I am doing a project right now where I'm writing one poem a day this year. Ooh. So I guess you could check that out if you're super curious. It's at poems.violetpixel.com. But other than that, I just have a bunch of stuff that I'm working on behind the scenes. So nothing public beyond that yet.
So we watched the episode that we're going to talk about that we will get to. It's a Voyager episode called Worst Case Scenario, which is a season 3, episode 25. And last you were on, we watched a TNG episode. So I want to talk about your feelings about Voyager. Let's just start off with, what do you think about Voyager in general?
I really like Voyager in general. It's one of my favorite series. I really like the entire like TNG, DS9, Voyager era. Mm-hmm. Like that's probably my favorite Star Trek of all, those three. And I feel like Voyager had a very, very good premise that was sometimes executed well and sometimes executed poorly. I really do wonder about Voyager specifically, like, you know, just after this episode is, you know, Scorpion Part 1, which is the cliffhanger for season 3 going into season 4. And the original plan was to remove Harry Kim and then have, you know, Kes stay on board. And then he got voted by some magazine, I think, as one of the sexiest yes. people, and they kept him or something mm-hmm. like that. I'm like, I'd rather have the final 4 seasons without him. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been amazing.
But, I agree.
You know, like it's fine, I guess. It's what we got. So, but I mean, we'll never know. You know, we'll never know what it was. But you know, overall, I do like Voyager a lot. Like I said, there are some missteps along the way. This episode is kind of one of them, but we'll get to that. in my opinion, of course. But yeah, I like Voyager overall.
Well, we'll get back to that. But so the thing I like to ask people about is who's their favorite character within the series? So what Voyager character is your favorite? I was going to ask, actually, which Voyager character do you identify most with? But I feel like that's actually two different questions. So I will ask both. Who's your favorite and who do you identify with most? And maybe they're the same person.
No, they are different people. I'd say the character that I like the most is probably the Doctor. He is delightfully flamboyant and eccentric in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm always drawn to the like artificial life characters, you know, the Doctor and Data, and, you know, they're such rich sources of being able to like explore, like what does life really mean? What are we talking about when we're talking about life? And, mm-hmm. There's a lot of opportunity to tell stories around that and rights and things like that. Again, some missteps in Voyager in that regard, but that's not the episode we're talking about. So that's who I like the most, because he is a delightful character in a lot of ways, and he can be very funny. The character that I would identify with the most is probably Captain Janeway, because I can understand being placed in a predicament, you know, where you're stranded, you know, across the galaxy. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't put myself in exactly that predicament, but I can understand... Situation. Yeah, I can understand her desire and her almost, you know, ruthless need to get the crew home at all costs. And so, yeah, I can identify with that need to, you know, put the crew before yourself and make sure that they're taken care of.
And I think that in many ways, Captain Janeway, of all the captains that we know, has the hardest mission, right? I mean, she is mm-hmm. cut off from everywhere. She needs to keep everybody alive, and she's got this crew of two different factions that they don't really play with, although this episode kind of does. But generally, it's not really. It's just everybody's together. It's fine. But my complaint about Voyager is I wish they did a little bit more with that, but we'll talk about that more later. And so she's cut off support. She needs to, you know, it's so easy to, as this episode posits, kind of reject the morals and the Federation standards and just kind of, you know, go for broke and try to get back home. But with a couple of exceptions, which make for interesting storytelling, Captain Janeway keeps her standards and you know, delivers the crew home. But, you know, like Captain Picard, who I enjoy greatly as a character, had his own trials and tribulations, but he had a whole support network and, you know, he could call for help and things. So he didn't quite have to deal with the same things that Captain Janeway had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't have coffee all the time. Captain Picard could dial up his tea whenever he wanted.
Yeah, she had to go find some coffee and some nebulas.
That's right. And then, or talk to Neelix. And really,
yeah,
you don't want to do
speaking,
that.
Yeah, speaking of hard missions and how hard she had it, like, Picard didn't have Neelix to deal with.
And I will say, one of my problems with Voyager, I do like Voyager. I've come around to it. For a while there, I didn't like it at all. But I'm it's growing on me. But I still think that, you know, the ratio of characters I don't like to characters I do like is a little off in Voyager, because there are a few characters I just don't really like. And I can't say the same for many of the other series, which is, I think, the biggest problem I have with Voyager, except for Enterprise. But Enterprise, the problem with Enterprise is that I can't really remember any of the characters, and that's a different problem. It's probably better that I don't like a character, but I can remember their names, than not even remember what their names are.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
But let's talk about this episode now. So this is one of these, they want to pull a fast one on you in this episode. Mm-hmm. Which doesn't really, I don't really understand why they did this in the third season, and they would think that, I don't understand this episode, really. I think it's an interesting idea, but I feel like it was too late in the run, because I was watching this with my lovely wife, Marisa. And as the first part was unfolding, she was like, this doesn't make any sense. Chakotay would do that. Something's going on. And you feel like they want that reveal to be a surprise, but it really isn't.
It's really not. Yeah, it's very thinly veiled.
Yeah. So anyway, this episode starts off with Balada is walking down the turbo lift, and Chakotay comes up to her, and he's basically like, "Hey, Tuvok is awful. Captain Janeway is not much better, and we should take over the ship." And that's the opening. And you think, well, Marisa turned to me and said, "Chakotay wouldn't do that."
Yeah. But even before that, like right off the bat, it's like, she's an ensign? Wait, why is she an ensign? What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like mutiny on a starship?
No. 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 And this is, I feel like, and this is what I was talking about before, that, like, I think this is, so the story, the series I wanted Voyager to be was clearly not the series that they wanted it to be, right? So they wanted it to be what it was, and that's fine. I kind of was hoping it would be more like Battlestar Galactica, which it was not, and that's mm-hmm. fine. But I feel like this kind of storyline of, you know, the Maquis and the Starfleet crew kind of, you know, rubbing up against each other and getting annoyed would have been very interesting for the first season of Voyager, as they, you know, they gelled as a crew, and we saw the little, you know, interpersonal conflict, but they come together because they're stranded and they have to, you know, be one crew. So I feel like if they had actually done this in the first season, that would have been interesting. They decided to do that like in the first episode and then decide everything was fine afterwards.
Yeah.
Until this episode.
Yeah, it's a very odd choice. You know, like you said, this episode would have made sense in the first season. And would have played a lot better in the first season too, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's way too late at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But we find out what's happening very shortly. But before, actually, it's not all that shortly. So there's a whole lot of stuff that happens. So you think with the opening, you're like, oh boy, what's wrong with Chakotay? This is weird. And so B'Elanna goes to the bridge. Captain Janeway says, I'm out of here. I have to go talk to some aliens you've never heard of. And I'm taking Tom Paris with me. Chakotay's like, well, hey, why don't you take Tuvok with you? He's nobody likes him.
And it was a real pain in the neck.
Exactly. And this is another episode. Yeah. Spoilers, if you haven't watched this episode, this is all the holodeck simulation. They treat holodeck Tuvok pretty poorly, but in this episode, they also kind of treat real Tuvok not all that much better. So that's another complaint I have with Voyager, is that they kind of mock Tuvok a little bit too much for my liking. Especially when you got Harry Kim right there. But anyway.
Yeah. I feel like Tuvok was generally an underutilized character throughout the entire series. I think there was a lot of depth to explore there that they just didn't.
Yes. They just had him, you know, frown or say something that was like a wet blanket, or show up on the bridge in his pajamas or whatever. And mm-hmm. just like, oh, why are you doing this to Tuvok? He could be a really interesting character. But he is stymied by the writing. But anyway, so Chakotay has decided he doesn't like Tuvok, and it becomes clear because he wants to take over the ship, and Tuvok wouldn't look kindly to that. So the big question is, oh, is B'Elanna gonna be with the mutineers or not? Turns out she decides to go with the mutineers, and you think, well, that's weird. But she does. So they stun Tuvok, and Harry Kim gets stunned, and off they go to, I think they have to, Chakotay and B'Elanna have to go check out something, and they run into Seska.
Can I just say real quick, before we leave the bridge, Harry Kim in this, you know, iteration of Harry Kim, he makes horrible tactical decisions when the bridge is under siege. Like, I don't know what Tuvok was thinking when he programmed that character. Again, spoilers, you know, this Tuvok's program. Mm-hmm. He's just like, being yelled at, and he gets frustrated, and then he just like launches his body up from the console and he's like, stun me. And I'm like, really? Whatever. It's fine.
And you would think, so he is hiding behind his console as people are shooting, which I understand that's a natural reaction. You would think that he would maybe like try to do something on his computer or something to override something. That feels like what a Starfleet officer would do instead of hiding behind his console. You would hide behind your console and also try to use it to maybe like beam someone. It probably wouldn't have worked, but at least try it, Harry Kim. Come on.
Well, you know, I'm thinking something just simple, like use your console to shut off the bridge lights and then take them by surprise. It doesn't have to be fancy.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But Harry Kim did not think of all these things. And to be fair, for Harry Kim, this is actually not Harry Kim. This is Tuvok's holographic representation of Harry Kim.
Which makes me think that Tuvok did not have a very high opinion of Harry Kim at the time.
I think that is true. And then we see Seska, and we know people who have been watching Voyager know that's not right, because she's apparently dead at this point. I don't really remember Seska's story all that well. I'm not a Seska expert, but I did know she was dead when this episode aired. So that was another kind of red flag that, although I think she comes back. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. I think the same part of your brain that isn't remembering the Enterprise characters is the part of your brain that's not remembering the Seska stuff. It's that same kind of dynamic, I think.
A lot of stuff happens with Seska. She's like a Cardassian, right? Or something. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Someone who's listening right now is sending me a strongly worded email about the fact that I don't remember much about Seska, and I apologize for not remembering much about Seska and not doing my research. That's the other complaint I get when people are like, well, why don't you, you know, do your research before you're talking about Seska, Scott? And because I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah, it's hard for me to care about Seska as well. It's just like, let's just move on.
And that's what we're going to do. She is there, and she shouldn't be. And B'Elanna gives her the old, she's like, Seska, what are you doing here? But anyway, so Chakotay reveals his plan, that he's got all the senior officers hidden away, but he's going to drop them off on a planet, and all of the young junior officers have the chance to decide if they want to be with him or against him. And you think, well, this is weird. And then what's even weirder is Tom Paris walks in, and you thought, well, hey, I thought Tom Paris was on the shuttle with Captain Janeway. And it turns out it's a hologram. Well, he's not a hologram, but B'Elanna's on the holodeck. She tells the computer to freeze the program. And now the big reveal is that she is participating in a holo novel. That's what they call it, right? A holo novel. That she has somehow found while trying to, I guess it's a slow day in engineering because she's been purging the data banks.
Yeah.
I don't know if your chief engineer would be doing that, but whatever.
Maybe it's relaxing.
Oh, that's true. She could. I do sometimes just arrange my files on my computer. So maybe that's what she was doing. She was just kind of very zen, trying to get whatever her holo program running. And it was like, you know, out of memory, I can't load whatever Klingon thing she does. I don't really know what B'Elanna likes to do in her free time. Maybe she was trying to, here's what I think she was trying to do now. Here's my headcanon. She's trying to delete Tom Paris's black and white robot.
Oh my goodness.
1950s thing. And she came across this one.
I can see that. Yeah. if I do let myself run away with a headcanon, though, I get into trouble because I create these overly elaborate situations where I'm like, okay, so she's sitting there in engineering, you know, purging the database. So what does that look like physically? And I imagine her like, you know, having the warp core open with like a one-way force field, and she's like got a bunch of isolinear chips on the desk in front of her, and she's like flicking them in, and you know they fly through the force field and get vaporized immediately in the reaction.
Oh, man,
it's like, yeah, I can't let myself do that too much.
That would be awesome. That explains why she's doing it.
It would be awesome. Yeah, exactly.
And I will say, much like that, I'm going to skip to much later in the episode, when they decide, they find out Tuvok wrote this thing, whatever, and now they need to write an ending. And I thought, oh, this will be interesting to see what tools they use to write a holo novel. This is the kind of nerd that I am. I wanted to see them using the tools to write, because it seems like it'd be very complicated to write this holographic novel, because you have to have all these characters and they have to, like, there has to be branching logic about how they react to things, right? And see, this is, once again, I got my English major hat on because I went to college in the late 90s. And so hyperlink fiction was all the rage, where you'd build the HTML pages and click on links and it would change the story. So I kind of feel like that's what it would be like to write a holographic novel.
Yeah. But no, they're just walking around with pads.
They just go, and we don't even get to see it because holographic Seska, or actually, I guess, real Seska. Well, we'll get there. But I was disappointed that I didn't get to see the authoring tools, basically.
Same. But
I'm glad I'm not alone in that. So it turns out, like I said, Tuvok has written this, but this is a big mystery. They don't find that out until later. Although I will say, these people must be very foolish, because the first thing that occurred to me once we realize it's a holographic thing is that, oh, Tuvok wrote this as an exercise just in case the Maquis crew decided to take over the ship.
Yeah.
And it turns
that
out
was my thought as well.
Exactly what it was, which makes sense. And they should really have figured it out immediately as well. But they didn't, because reasons, I guess. It doesn't really pay off. Like, they spend a lot of time trying to figure out who did it. And then there's a meeting and Captain Janeway is like, oh, a lot of people are playing this holographic novel. Tuvok's like, well, of course we should stop it, because I'm Vulcan and we're not allowed to have fun. And Captain Janeway's like, no, this is one of the things I like about Captain Janeway. She's like, I am not just a captain. I'm also the leader of a community, and a community needs a way to be creative and express themselves and let off some steam. And this is not doing any harm. So I think we should finish it. And then Tuvok's like, all right, I wrote it. Which I think is my favorite scene, is when he, in that room, when he's like, all right, I wrote it. And then everyone's like, ooh, are you going to finish writing it? And he's like, no, I don't think it's a waste of time. And Tom Paris is like, I'll do it. And then Tuvok's like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, well, the lesser of two evils here.
Exactly.
There's one piece that I want to talk about.
Sure.
Back when Tom walks in on B'Elanna, and he's like, you know, I want to run through it from the beginning. And so he does, and he does, you know, he he obviously turns to the wrong page in the Choose Your Own Adventure hollow novel thing. But, you know, and he ends up in the brig, right? Mm-hmm. And he's in there and he's like, he's antsy and he's wanting to escape. And, you know, he turns to Tuvok at one point and they're just in the brig and he's like talking about escape. And he's like, we can't just sit here doing nothing. And Tuvok's like, that's exactly what we're going to do. You know, like, we're not doing nothing. We're thinking about escape, but the time is not right to act. So then Tom makes this offhand comment about that. And he's like, this is boring. It's been over an hour. And I'm like, wait a minute. The Tom I know would not last an over an hour just standing in a brig in a holodeck without mm-hmm. anything happening. And then that got me thinking, like, wait, is this like a holodeck in a holodeck thing? Is this a real Ooh. Tom Paris?
Whoa.
And then I started thinking about it way too much, you know, and I was like, wait. This is not like that kind of episode. This was not written by that kind of team of writers. So, you know, let's just back up. It was probably just a poor choice of words for that character to say at that point. But it got me thinking at that point, like, wait.
Oh.
Wait, what's happening?
That would have been interesting. But yeah, it was just a poor choice of words. And I do want to go back to the part where, and this is, I don't really like Tom Paris. I don't know if I'm the only person who doesn't really like Tom Paris. But one of the reasons I don't like him is he comes in, he interrupts B'Elanna on the holodeck, right? Which is, okay, fine. Yeah. They were supposed to meet for lunch. All right, whatever. You think maybe he would knock or something. Yeah, who knows what you're doing in the holodeck? I think that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
If we've learned anything from Reginald Barclay, don't just barge in on people on the holodeck. You don't want to see what they're doing.
No, you don't.
But even worse than that is then he's like, well, I want to do it. Let me just start it over, even though you're in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Tom, that is not cool, man.
Yeah, he's problematic.
He is problematic. But then he does it. They start over and he does it and he makes poor choices as he does in the rest of his life. He gets stuck in the brig and then, yeah, he does the thing where but anyway, that's fine. He runs through it a couple times and tries some different things and he's always going wrong. But then I think he finds, oh, well, we skipped over the part where I guess he gets to the end. So Tom gets to the end, right? And it just stops.
I think that's later.
I don't remember what's
happening. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
No,
it's not that kind of episode.
No, yes, it's unfinished. They need to find out who. So Tuvok's like, I'll help fix it. So that's when we get, this is the twist, I guess the big twist, right? They go to the holodeck and Tuvok's like, initialize the story time engine or whatever he says. And they are suddenly in a holographic brig and the comms and the transporters are offline on Voyager. And holographic Seska appears and she says, haha, Tuvok, when I was here, I did not trust you. So I looked through your stuff and I modified this program so that whenever you came to modify it, this program would start and I could kill you basically. But I'm not going to kill you now. I'll kill you in a little while.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't understand that part. Why didn't she just shoot him?
This is the beginning of the, like, a series of things that I don't understand. The first one is like, why didn't she just shoot him? It's not like the actual Seska is there to derive emotional enjoyment from this. It's like, it's just a program she wrote. It's a shell script. Like, just write the line to kill them immediately. Why wait? Whatever.
I guess it's more sporting, I guess, if they have a chance. Speaking of which, she counts down. And this was weird too. Like, she's like, the holodeck safety protocols are offline. First off, there's so many problems with having a holodeck. Being able to easily turn off the safeguards seems like a big problem. But anyway, so she's like, if I kill you, you're dead. I'll give you 10 seconds to try to run away before I shoot.
My favorite part about that scene, though, comes just before that, when like the evil holographic Seska kicks in. And like one of the first things out of her mouth is a single sentence explanation of her backstory for the people who aren't aware who the hell this is. Mm-hmm. It's like, that was very helpful. Thank you, Seska. Thank you, evil holographic Seska, for that useful information.
Yes. Well,
in context.
If you don't know who Seska is, this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't really make any sense if you know who Seska is either, but it makes a little more sense. So good job, writers, for that one line that gives you the needed context. Bad job for the countdown, the 10-second countdown that Tom and Tuvok apparently completely ignore, and then when they just realize their communicators aren't working, slowly jog out of the room.
Yeah, no, There's such a lack of urgency in that scene. It's ridiculous.
And that's a scene that could be, it could be quite tense, but it is not. They're just like, oh, we can't get out. I guess we will slowly saunter out of this room.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And but this is the exciting thing where now Captain Janeway figures out, oh, no, they're stuck on the holodeck. We can't beam them out. But I know what I have to do. I have to change the characters in the holodeck program so that they don't get killed. And they do. Well, they don't get killed. But Captain Janeway attempts to change some characters and it doesn't really work out well. She adds like a fire extinguisher in one scene.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Well, given your love of the Doctor, there is a Doctor scene where they run to, they get hurt. Tom Paris gets shot, and they run off to sick bay to get, some fixing. And we've got a cranky, not so nice doctor there who is waiting for
them. Yeah. The deranged evil doctor. I did enjoy that scene. I did enjoy that scene overall, and I think he did a good job with the scene. And you know, it's like the actual salt in the wound. Ha ha, that's very clever, I guess. But the thing about that scene is like he delivers the salt in the wound with like a comically oversized hypo spray that you like. It's like, why is that there? Why can't it just be a regular hypo spray? Why does it have to be like a 4X like
it's the novelty
hypo jumbo spray. Salt hypo spray? Like what does that? Why is that there? And you never see that prop before this, and you never see it again after. And it's like, did you just make that for this scene? For some, like, what did that add to this scene? I don't know. It's so weird.
It is very weird. This whole episode is weird. Although I did like the part where, so Tuvok, after they find out evil holographic Seska has got them in her evil hologram, Captain Janeway shows up and she's like, hey, Tom and Tuvok, come here. You got to help me. And Tuvok says, Tom Paris is like, all right, well, we have to help Captain Janeway. Tuvok rightly says, well, wait a second. She's a hologram. Seska has programmed her, so we should not trust anybody. And then it leads to the doctor scene where they kind of just trust him. And it turns out they shouldn't have trusted him. But I thought that was interesting. They don't really do much with it. Captain Janeway, hologram. Captain Janeway dies, by the way, FYI. RIP,
so hologram. Sad.
Captain Janeway, disintegrated by a phaser rifle that is malfunctioning, because we need that to come back later.
We do need that.
I don't know how much
we need that so mad.
Yeah, it's really important. And so they're like, oh no, we can't beat Seska because she's a genius and her holographic program is fighting off attempts to change things. And so Captain Janeway, there's this,
like, the episode's already off the rails for me, but it went way off the rails at this point, because it's like, okay, so the premise here is that back when Seska was around, she for some reason took apparently a very large amount of time and effort to write this huge, you know, modification to the program. So which is essentially like, you know, she sat down and she wrote a big, huge shell script to execute, you know, when Tuvok went in to edit this file. So it's fine, whatever. I can accept that. But then it gets to this point where Janeway is trying to modify the program to help them out. And then Seska's modifications start fighting back. And it's like, well, wait a minute. We've just made the leap from she wrote a shell script in the past to she wrote like an incredibly complicated advanced AI that can adapt to unforeseen circumstances in the future. And I'm like, you've lost me. You've completely lost me.
It does seem, I have a lot of questions. This is why I wanted to see what the tools look like to write a holo novel, because I have a lot of questions about how holodeck programming is made, because it seems like it's very easy to do, but it shouldn't be as easy as it is. Yes. And this is a case in point in which I feel like even Seska's shell script to deal with all of the eventualities of what Tuvok might want to do, because she doesn't just want to kill him, she wants to have this whole narrative that he can interact with, would be very complicated by itself. And then add on this whole thing of like it's self-aware basically, and will fight off attempts to change it, and can override other systems on Voyager. It seems like Seska might have been wasted in whatever she was doing before. She should have been a full-time holodeck programmer.
Exactly. Like, she could have made an incredibly successful career out of doing this. And I don't know. It's bizarre. The other thing, too, about, like, you know, Janeway's out there. She's trying to help him. What, and this happens not just in this episode, but many, many other holodeck-based episodes. Why can't you just turn it off? and I'm like, you know, like the holodeck, looking at what it does and how it works, it can't take a small amount of power. You know, it would stand to reason that a holodeck would require massive amounts of power. Mm-hmm. And if you've got some kind of like futuristic magic power source that puts out enough power for the holodeck to use and you can't turn it off, why don't you use that for the engines? I'm just asking.
Well, that is a fine question. I would imagine someone has just opened an email to you, and they're going to explain that I assume the warp core somehow powers everything. It's always been my assumption, but maybe I'm wrong. I should check my technical manual. I don't have the Voyager technical manual. So
yeah, I don't know. I do remember some offhand comment, like in one of the first episodes when they were in the first episodes of Voyager, when they get stranded in the Delta Quadrant, there's some offhand line about like, can we use the power from the holodeck to power like the replicators or something like that? And they're like, no, the systems are incompatible. And I'm like, what do you mean they're incompatible? Does it generate power or not? Like for hundreds of years, humans have been like taking some kind of energy production, some kind of system that produces some kind of energy and converting it into whatever the hell we need it to be. And you're telling me that like in this 400 year in the future paradise of technology that you can't take the holodeck generators and like just change that energy into stuff that makes, you know, pudding? Are you kidding me? Whatever. It's fine. It's fine. It's Voyager. Yeah, we're in the Delta Quadrant. We're doing stuff on the holodeck. It's fantastic. We can't turn it off. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Just like, hey, Seska's back.
Yeah. And that's just bad Starship design, frankly, as well, to have incompatible power systems on your stuff. You want it to be as interchangeable as possible, I would think. But I'm not a Starship designer, so what do I know?
I mean, if I was a Starship designer, you know, like you spend all this time designing this elaborate system that ejects the whole warp core, just that for the holodeck. Just eject them.
And I'm with you. I think the first thing they should have done is let's just assume, I'll do a little headcanon here, and assume that the shell script that Seska wrote also overrode the power off system for the holodeck, right? So they can't turn it off using the systems of the ship. But what they should do, one assumes, is get themselves in a Jeffrey's tube and like pull out a power relay or something and just shut off the power for all of it. Unless we're led to believe, and this may be true, that holodecks for some reason have self-contained power units, which seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, it's you can't think about this particular thing too much or it just falls apart into tiny little bits. Yeah, it's way too late for us, but
Yourselves, listener.
Save yourselves. Leave now.
But so, you say, speaking of save yourself, the dramatic peak of this episode is good old Tom Paris and Tuvok are in the cargo bay with Seska and her band of hollow ruffians, and she's got them at phaser point, and the Janeway makes the ship rumble and everybody falls over, and Tuvok grabs her phaser rifle and Tom gets a phaser, and they're like, aha, we win. And Seska says, well, actually, I'll just make us self-destruct, which I thought was interesting. And then it turns out that command, once again, proving Seska's like the world's greatest programmer, will cause the power relays near the holodeck to overheat or blow out or whatever, so that in 60 seconds they're gonna die because it's gonna blow up. Like, they will die in the real world. And so Tuvok is like, all right, fine, we'll give you our guns back. And Tom Paris is like, no, we can't. And Tuvok says, that's an order. And he gives the guns back. And Tuvok is basically like, haha, do what you will, Seska. And so Seska's like, well, I want to kill you, so I'm going to kill you now, even though I could have killed you like hours ago. But anyway, so she shoots her phaser rifle and oh no, Tuvok has made it malfunction. And so a la Captain Janeway, RIP hologram, Captain Janeway, Seska is destroyed by her own phaser rifle and the program ends.
I have so many questions about that particular scene. Like, so like the ship shakes and they get the weapons. Why didn't they just shoot Seska immediately? I mean, it's not like she's a living being. We have questions about that. Like, this is apparently a very elaborate shell script. Is the shell script alive? I don't know, probably, but that's beside the point. Like, you're in the holodeck, it's trying to kill you. You get the phaser, just shoot it.
You shoot
Seska. Like, why do you stop and take the time to explain what's going on to a hologram that's trying to kill you? Like, it's bizarre.
I don't know.
And it's like, okay, well, wait, did he like somehow fiddle with that phaser rifle ahead of time and he didn't want to do it because he knew he would be shooting himself? I'm like, okay, why didn't Tom shoot Seska when he got the phaser? Like, are both phasers rigged? What the hell is going on? It doesn't hold up to any kind of scrutiny.
No, and I read that as when he had the phaser, when he got it from Seska and she was talking about, you know, whatever she was talking about, that's when Tuvok fiddled with it to make it malfunction. But
yeah, that's how I read it as well, yeah.
So I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. And then they leave and...
Wait, hang on.
Oh?
I'm not done.
You're not done? Well, carry on.
So then Seska's over here and she's like, I'm going to set self-destruct. And as you've pointed out, she is like one of the foremost programmers of Federation technology in the entire world who can just like write some code that mm-hmm. will not only affect what's going on the holodeck, but actually affect the entire ship systems.
Yeah. She sets Belana says something like that should be impossible or something like that.
Yeah. And you'd think Belana would be the one who would know,
mm-hmm.
but whatever. But she's like, I got you still. I can do the self-destruct. And she's like, but I'm going to give you 60 seconds to figure it out. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you can just set the self-destruct, why not no seconds? Why not just self-destruct immediately? Or why not 1 second? Like, mm-hmm. why is it 60 seconds? Why do we, whatever.
Well, maybe 2 seconds, like, so you can gloat a little bit and enjoy the squirm, but.
But who is enjoying the squirm here at this point?
Our self-aware Seska hologram.
I guess. It makes me wonder, like, did Seska sit down and like find this program and then modify it and then like maybe put in 2 semicolons instead of 1 on accident? And the Federation technology is just so advanced that threw off like some kind of cascading error that made, you know, like in the background, it's been running in the computer for months now. Like, it just kind of evolved into what it is now, you know. Like, maybe Seska is not the mastermind here. Maybe this is just like a random convergence of like particular conditions and entropy just creating the AI on its own. I don't know. Again, I'm going way off into the land of like headcanon here to attempt to explain this, but I don't feel like I should have to go to these lengths to do this. But here we are.
And that is not as far-fetched an idea, because as we know in The Next Generation, in order to create a sentient hologram, all you have to do is say to the computer, create an opponent that can beat Data, and then it creates a self-aware hologram that knows everything and is basically a sentient being. So
wait a minute, that's true. That happened before this mm-hmm. in the timeline. So Seska probably just went in there and she's like, create an opponent capable of beating Tuvok.
Yep. And there you go. I guess that she didn't have to spend that much time doing it because the computer just follows those orders and creates all of this programming. So really they're fighting the Voyager computer. They're not fighting Seska.
Which they apparently also cannot turn off.
That's true. Well, they don't even try.
They don't even try. It's like it's like beyond the pale to even consider. So to turn off the computer. Well, no, that's like turning off the sky. What are you saying?
How am I going to check my tweets? I assume they have tweets in the future, but maybe not.
Well, even if they did, like, they wouldn't be able to get them because they're in the Delta Quadrant. They're too far.
Well, maybe they have a Mastodon instance on Voyager, so they could see what's going on Voyager.
And I would accept that.
All right. See, there you go. Yeah. Problem solved. And this episode ends in Neelix's, what do they call this place?
The mess hall.
The mess hall. There you go. Thank you. I was going to say 10 forward. I knew that was wrong. In the mess hall where they're all gathered around the table and laughing about how Tuvok and Paris almost died.
And hilarious.
It's crazy. And they're like, oh, what's going to be the next one of novel you write? And Tuvok is like, well, it's not going to be set on Voyager, that's for sure. And I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Then Neelix is like, oh, you should write about me. And everyone's like, no. Which was my second favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I do feel like the scene in the mess hall at the end is a very appropriate ending to this particular episode, because it's just like, it's just as cringeworthy as the entire series of events. So it's just like, it's perfectly calibrated.
To be clear, I did not like the scene, but I did like them shooting down Neelix's idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There are many things that bother me about Neelix, but he does it in this episode. He calls Tuvok Mr. Vulcan. That feels like it's space racism to me.
Well, that is totally space racism. I mean, he does that throughout the entire series. And it's like, you know, like I can understand, like, you know, a faux pas in the first couple of times, but like, did no one talk to him? Yeah, did no one take him aside? And they were like, hey, dude, seriously.
That's right. It's not your fault. Cool. You didn't know. But,
yeah, you didn't know.
Try better.
Yeah.
Nobody's perfect, Neelix. You might slip every once in a while, but just actively try. And I don't think anyone, or even worse, maybe several people have, and he just has ignored it. And he's like, no, Tuvok loves it when I call him Mr. Vulcan. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it might be that, and it's disturbing. It's problematic.
It is problematic. Neelix, try better. Justin, let me ask you, what did you think of this episode?
I gotta tell you, it's not my favorite episode. I don't know if you picked up on that.
No, I'm shocked.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like this episode was, especially like, so part of the way through the episode, when does that happen? After the staff meeting. It's after the staff meeting when they decide to, you know, write the ending to the program. Mm-hmm. They're in the mess hall, Tuvok and Tom, and they're talking about, you know, how to end it. And people come up with suggestions and stuff. And I feel like they lifted that scene and the dialogue from that scene directly from a conversation they had in the writer's room. And they're like, wouldn't it be great if this conversation we just had was in an episode? And if I was there, I'd have been genius. Like, no, that's the worst idea you could possibly have. Let's actually write a good episode. But that didn't happen.
We got this.
Yeah. Well, they needed someone, and someone wasn't there. So they wrote this, and I'm like, I mean, this is not the worst Voyager episode. This is not the worst episode of Voyager by far, but it is definitely not a good episode of Voyager.
No, it is not a good episode of Voyager. And I'll say this again. I feel like every time there is a bad episode of Star Trek, I say this, but I think it's true whenever I say it. I feel like this is a good idea, and this could have been an interesting episode. It was just poorly handled.
Yeah, like a lot of the same core concepts here are executed beautifully with, like, later in the series with Captain Ransom on, what's the ship? The Equinox.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, I believe that's the name of the two-parter there. The Equinox is like the whole idea of, like, you know, we're stuck in the Delta Quadrant and we're going to do whatever we possibly can to get home, you know, screw the Prime Directive, you know, to hell with our ethics and morals. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I believe that two-parter did an excellent job with those core themes, you know, in stark contrast to this episode, which did not.
So I think that our recommendation to you, listener, after you've listened to all of this and possibly watched the episode before to get some context, is don't watch this episode, but watch the Equinox two-parter, because those are two very good episodes of Voyager.
The other thing that you could do instead of watching this episode is Again, back in the beginning of this episode, when Tom just blatantly, just with no regard for any kind of, you know, respect for her boundaries or privacy, just barges in on Blahn on the holodeck. And she quite correctly, you know, says, what the hell? You know, don't do that. That's not cool. And Tom replies with, like, it's not like I caught you dancing with the Roomba with a naked Bolian. I'm like, instead of watching this episode, just think about that. Think about dancing the Roomba with a naked Bolian. That would be a much better time.
I agree. And I think that's how we're going to end, because I think, how can you beat a naked Bolian?
You can't.
You can't.
That's why people do that on the holodeck.